All right, several years ago, my wife and I hosted someone who was checking out the community where we live, North Woodmere, for Shabbos, and my wife served a spinach veal dish as an appetizer, and the person ate it. They said, oh, this is delicious, it's fantastic, so wonderful, this meat spinach thing. And through the course of the conversation, later on in the evening, it became evident that this person doesn't eat veal, that they hold veal is not kosher, and they don't eat veal. And then at some point, the woman asked my wife, can you give me the recipe for that spinach meat thing that we had before? I didn't even know what veal tasted like. So my wife had never heard up until that point of the idea that there are some people that don't eat veal. So what is the issue? So presumably, if at that point she had not known about it, probably many other people also don't know about what is this issue that some people don't eat veal. Mori v'Rabbi Rav Shechter, I believe, still at a yom does not eat veal. So what would such a chumrah be based upon? So first of all, a little bit of metzias. Veal is the meat of a baby cow that is slaughtered at a very, very young age when it's still very soft. And the reason it's so soft is not only because it's a baby, but they feed that cow a special diet from the moment that it's born with basar b'chalav mida oraisa. They give it some sort of formula, some sort of powder formula that needs to be mixed with hot water, and the powder contains animal fats and it contains milk, and it's therefore when you cook it together, that is basar b'chalav mida oraisa. And that is all the animal eats from the time they're very young until 3 days before they shecht it. That is it. That's all the animal is going to eat. The animal eats nothing else. So its entire growth comes from that from that powder. It should also be noted, typically speaking, they do not allow these animals to roam freely, lest it develop muscle tone, and then the meat will not be quite as soft. The meat's going to be very soft if you lock it in a little cage so that it can't develop any of its muscles. So that's part of the way that that they farm veal. So the what does this have to do with halacha? The Gemara in the Mishnah says that if you have a kosher animal that nurses from a non-kosher animal, and we know the milk of a non-kosher animal is not kosher, so if you have a kosher animal that nurses from a not kosher animal, you're not allowed to be makriv that animal, the kosher animal on the mizbeach, because its entire growth comes from a non-kosher animal. The Gemara says that we're assuming k'sheira yankami behema surabana kol yimei chayel, that it's going to be that it nursed its entire life and it's going to be asur forever. So the Rambam, the Pirush Mishnah, says that since the Mishnah quotes this halacha in the name of Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus, and even though there's no one that's cholik in the Mishnah, we don't have a sheet of the Chacham that disagrees in the Mishnah, but we don't hold this way to das yachad Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus. That's how the Rambam holds. However, Tosos over there in Daf Lamed Aleph in Maseches Tumur says that we do paskin like Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus, and that this is true not just of korbanos, but it's asur ba'achila as well. If nispatma kol yimei chayav b'yisurei, not only can you not bring such an animal on the mizbeach, but if its entire life, all it ever ate was something that's asur ba'anah, then you're not allowed to eat such an animal. The animal itself is not going to be kosher if all it ever ate was yisurei hanah. That is shitas hatosos. So in halacha, naturally, how's this going to play out in halacha? The mechaber is going to paskin like the Rambam. So the mechaber paskins, you have no problems over here. This is a das yachad Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus. You have nothing to worry about. The Rama paskins like Tosfos. The thing is, the Rama doesn't just paskin like Tosfos. He seems to go a step further than Tosfos. The Rama writes, Nispat makol yamei chayeha bima'acholos asuros. If all it ever ate were non-kosher foods, then the animal itself is not going to be kosher, it's going to be asur to eat. Now that's a step further than Tosfos. Why? Because what did Tosfos say? If the animal, all the animal ever ate was yisurei hana'ah, then you're not going to be able to use that animal. The Rama went a step further. Not only if all it ate was yisurei hana'ah, if all it ate was non-kosher foods, the animal is going to be asur. The Shach rejects the Rama for that reason. The Shach says, what are you talking about? Tosfos never went that far. Tosfos only said if it ate yisurei hana'ah. So according to the Rama and the Shach, would seem that if the veal taka eats only basar b'chalav midaraisa, well, basar b'chalav midaraisa, we know it says los vashgadi b'chalav imo 3 times in the Torah, echad iser achila, right, and echad iser bishul and echad isra hana'a. So there's an isra hana'a of basar b'chal of midar raisa. So if that's the case, if all of these is really basar b'chal of midar raisa, then both bein l'rama, bein l'shach, it should be asr. The OU was very hesitant many years ago to give hechsher against the Rama by a case of a fish pond that would be fed macholos asuros. They had this issue. There was a fish pond, all the fish were fed was macholos asuros. It was not fed isur hana. Should they give ashkacha, should they not? The Shach holds its mutter, many other poskim hold its mutter, but the Rama says it's no good. That's if you didn't have isur hana. But if you have isur hana, the Rama and the Shach would hold it's a problem. So many of the companies, I think the Rabbi Ganak worked with some of the veal providers, that they adjusted their system to make it that the cows were only going to be fed basar b'chal of midrabanan, which is not asr b'ana, it's asr b'achila, not asr b'ana, not basar b'chal of midaraisa, which would therefore satisfy the Shach, but not satisfy the Rama. Now, a simple solution to make it basar b'chal of midrabanan versus basar b'chal of midaraisa might be, instead of taking the powder and pouring boiling water over it, or putting the powder into a pot of boiling water, you could take a pot of boiling water, pour it into another pot, and then put the powder in. And that's what we call a kli sheni. And a kli sheni is einu mevashel, except for kali abishel, but let's assume the powder is not kali abishel. Kli sheni is einu mevashel, then it wouldn't be basar b'chal of midaraisa. That would seem to be a simple solution. I'm not sure exactly what they do. You read the literature on the topic, you don't get an exactly perfectly clear picture of what they do. Rabbi Bleich has an article about this, and he was not clear on exactly what they do. He has an article in the sixth most recent volume of Contemporary Halachic Problems. Unclear whether they do Iri Kli Rishon, whether they do Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, not 100% clear. There is a major person in the kashrus industry, particularly in the kashrus of meat, known as the Nir Bater Rav. I think he's a nephew of the Satmar Rebbe or something, or a cousin or something. His name is Rabbi Teitelbaum. The Nir Bater Rav works closely with the OU, though. Even though he has his own Chassidus Hashgacha, he works very closely with the OU as well. And Nir Bater Rav suggested several heterim. Number one, it's a Zevzegori. That there are other kosher ingredients in there as well. It's not only meat, fats, and chalav, it's also other kosher ingredients that are in the mixture. And therefore, since it's not only the basar b'chalav that's causing the problem, it's also some of the kosher ingredients, maybe that would make it mutter. Now, even if b'dievet it's kosher, the Prima Gadim in Sifsei Das, Simon Samach Oshei, says that you can't create a zevzegarim l'chadchila, so that may still be a problem. And it also seems to assume that when the basar b'chal gives tam into the whole taroves, and we say chaticha nas nevela, that the whole taroves takes on the status of basar b'chalav, that would only be on a derabbanon level, which would mean that the mixture would have a din of basar b'chalav midrabbanon, not basar b'chalav midaraisa. Fine, so it would not be in Israel now. The second possibility to be makel is that the majority opinion is like the Shach, the Pri Chadash, Kresi Plesi, Tshuvas Pnei Yeshua, Das Torah of the Marsham, Nishmas Adam, Aruch HaShulchan, they all hold like the Shach, so maybe we could hold like the Shach against the Rama. Third possibility, he suggests, is that the animals are permitted to suckle from their mothers for the first 7 to 10 days of their lives. So their entire lives haven't been purely from this formula. They did drink a little bit from their own mothers beforehand, which is total heter, and therefore maybe that's enough. That's not the most convincing heter, because the Shach understands that when we say that kol yemei chayav, it doesn't really have to be all of its life that it eats the macholos asuros or the yisurei hana. It just means that its primary development came from the macholos asuros, which over here it certainly does. Rabbi Bleich just has two additional ha'aras. Number one, he says that even though he does believe there is enough to be makel with over here, after all, you have the Shach and you have all the poskim who agree with the Shach over here, and you have the possibility of Zev Zagorim, there is enough grounds to be makel. But he says, you know, we sell things, we market things as glatt kosher nowadays. Now, what does glatt mean? So, really, what glatt means is that there are no sirchas on the lungs. But you'll see a fruit store that will say glatt farm, you know, or something like that. So there are no sirchas on the lungs of the peaches or the pears that you buy in the fruit store. So what does glatt really mean nowadays? So it says that the common parlance, you know, what we normally refer to as glatt, is something that never had to be horeb chacham, something that you never needed a talmud chacham to paskin on because it was so clear that it was kosher and never required a real psak. So he said, maybe at the very least we shouldn't market veal as glatt, because it at least requires a psak, because you're going to paskin against the Rama, so it's a psak. It at least requires a psak to paskin against the Rama. So he thought maybe at least we shouldn't market it as glatt. And the second ha'ara that he had is that he did research where he found that there has been a kosher formula that has been patented to a kosher feed for veal that has been patented, but has not seemed to have been used because of cost reasons. It's apparently much more expensive. But he points out that the Pesachei Teshuvah in Siman Samach Tzivkat Beis quotes from the Levush HaSarad that if an animal on the last 3 days of its life prior to the Shechita eats only kosher, then even though the rest of its life, its ikar growth came from non-kosher, that would be good enough. Last 3 days of its life, it eats only kosher. So he said, even if they don't want to go through the expense of feeding the veal this kosher formula its entire life, it's not that expensive to use it for at least three days, just to add that additional heter, he thought should make sense. Again, I don't know what the Matzias is, whether anyone ever took the advice that Rabbi Bleich gave. It seems like very sound advice, and seems like a worthwhile expense if it's only 3 days worth of feed. But anyway, that was his advice. There are just two other issues when it comes to veal. Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he discusses veal, and he points out that number one, tsar balechayim may be an issue, because Rav Moshe noticed that their legs are so weak that they can barely walk, and they must be in tremendous pain. So he thought that it may be an issue of tsar balechayim. Isn't tsar balechayim not a problem whenever there's a human benefit? So Rav Moshe didn't think there was a human benefit. He didn't see what the great benefit was to treat the animals this way, as opposed to just shechting young cows and using that as veal. He didn't see the whiteness of the meat or the special taste of the meat, but it seems that there really is a very big difference. Whether you judge this as enough of a benefit or not to warrant the tsar balechayim, it does seem that there's a reason they do this. The whiteness of the meat and the taste of the meat, texture of the meat, it is different when they treat the animals in this way. So it could be they get around the tsar balechayim issue that way, just by saying that there's a human benefit. The other problem Rav Moshe had is that it is clear, according to anybody who's ever been involved in a shachtais where they shachted veal, that there are many more sirchas on the lungs of veal than there is on regular animals, because of the mistreatment that the animal has, the way that the animal lives its whole life. So Rav Moshe surmised that if there are many more shilas on the lungs of veal, then there must be more shilas of trefus throughout the body of the animal as well. We normally don't check for other trefus because it's a miyachein omatsui. It's such an uncommon phenomenon to find other trefus that we don't have to bother checking for it. But Rav Moshe surmised that if there are so many trefus on the lungs of the animal, it must be that there are trefus in other parts, and maybe we should have to check for those trefus. Rabbi Bleich just points out that since Rav Moshe wrote that tshuva, people have checked, and it turns out that for whatever reason, it only affects the lungs. There's no higher incidence of trefus in the rest of the animal other than the lungs. So it seems that that concern of Rav Moshe seems to be unfounded. So again, there are some people that are machmir, like the shita of the Rambah, which is a reasonable thing to be machmir for, a shita of the Rambah, not eat veal. Many others who are meka, like the shita of the Shach, once we've adjusted the formula where it's not pasul b'chal midaraisa, it's only pasul b'chal midrabanan, and certainly the Shach and many other poskim is ample opinions to be makel with, presuming that it's only pasul b'chal midrabanan that they use to feed the veal.